There are many wonderful sections of Srimad Bhagavatam that are very instructive for us specifically, for coming to the position where we are to where we want to go. You know, we're here and the goal is there, and there's a big gap between where we are and what the goal is. Many sections of the Bhagavatam are especially helpful for us, and two sections that are very famous and our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada often quoted are from the sections of Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj. Here's a nice painting. Actually, it was done in color. This is a black and white of a painting that was commissioned by King Prataparudra. King Prataparudra was the king of Orissa and, of course, then also the king of Puri during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stay there. The king was a very elevated devotee. And the king commissioned one of Vrikreshwara Pandit's disciples, who was an artist, to paint a painting of Lord Chaitanya and his associates with King Prataparudra in the picture. So if you look closely, you'll see somebody offering prostrated obeisances there in the front. That's the king, because that's the mood of the king. He's the humble servant of all the Vaishnavas. And those of you who have been to Jagannath Puri, you'll maybe even recognize where the painting was set up. It's Narendra Sarovar. Narendra Sarovar is very near the Gundicha temple. And when Lord Jagannath goes from the main temple to Gundicha, he stays there for some number of days, and then there's this long section describing pastimes of Lord Chaitanya's associates. Daily they went to Narendra Sarovar. You can tell it's Sarovar because at the bottom of the painting there are some waves. That's the Sarovar. And the checkered, black and white checkered marble, that's at Narendra Sarovar. And in the background, right behind the king, there's Gadadhar Pandit reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Behind Gadadhar Pandit, there's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Lord Nityananda, and on the other side with the long white hair, that's Advaita Acharya. Because when Bengali Vaishnava wrote the Bengali names underneath who all the people are, Srivas Pandit is to the side of Lord Nityananda. And then in the front, Sarup Damodar and Jagatananda Pandit, and over on the other side, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and standing up, hanging up his clothes there, that's Haridas Thakur. Looks a little chubby, but that's Haridas. Particularly noteworthy is the king chose as a subject to have the artist paint not Sankirtan, but hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. Which means that they did it. Regularly they heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. I mean, it's implied. And it was a very important part of the Krishna Bhakti in Puri. We don't hear so much about it, other than one of the daily activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, rising early, attending the morning worship of Lord Jagannath, dancing in ecstasy before Lord Jagannath, receiving prasad and flowers and garlands and different articles. Maybe some of you have received Jagannath's toothbrush. Different articles, tadiya, offered to Lord Jagannath in the morning worship. And then he took the prasad of Jagannath to Siddha Bakul, where Haridas Thakur would reside, gave him the prasad of Jagannath, engaged in Krishna Katha for some time. And then he went to see the Gopinath deity that was being worshipped by Gadadhar Pandit. The deity of Gopinath, by the way, is sitting down. Because after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, the body of Gadadhar Pandit became very feeble. They were the same age, 48. And when you're 48, you're not feeble. But feeling separation from Lord Chaitanya, it's our garland ritual. And especially the garlands have a single thread in the back so it cuts your neck. That's part of the ritual. I've learned that one. I didn't get trained up. It's all over the place too, but it's not just one place. So the deity of Gopinath sat down so that Gadadhar could reach and place the crown and the garland and everything on Jagannath, on Gopinath. So you see the bottom photo, that's a Kartik month photo where there are legs that are placed below his cloth. But after Kartik, the legs disappear, and the rest of the 11 months of the year, he's sitting down. So Lord Chaitanya went to see the Gopinath deity, chanted in ecstasy, danced in ecstasy, and then after some time he sat and heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. You follow that thread carefully, and Gadadhar Pandit had many disciples, and those disciples were very gifted in Srimad Bhagavatam recitation. Haridas Pandit became the spiritual master of Ganga Mata Goswamini, and she was also renowned for her recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the origin? Gadadhar Pandit. And Lord Chaitanya would hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit for hours, every day. Now imagine, in front of this very special Gopinath deity, and that whole area of Puri is Vrindavan within Puri, naturally. And Gadadhar Pandit, who is Radharani, is reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to Krishna in the mood of Radharani, hearing the glories of Krishna before Tota Gopinath. Too bad they didn't have digital recorders to hear and see. But one can only imagine every day. And he liked especially hearing Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, and he would hear the whole narration. And after hearing the whole narration, he would say, "Say it again. Say it again." Usually in ISKCON, we don't do that. We say, "I heard that one. Can you tell me something new I haven't heard?" But the way of Srimad Bhagavatam is like making sandalwood paste. Probably many of the devotees here have made sandalwood paste, so you know what it's like. Have you ever made sandalwood paste? Would you like to learn how to make sandalwood paste? You just look at me, you don't have to ask him. Get a piece of wood that's maybe about that big as your fist, or maybe smaller, and three things, a flat rock or stone, and a little water, not too much, not too little, and chant Hare Krishna, and go like this. You've seen devotees make sandalwood paste? And as they go around and around and singing songs about Krishna and chanting Krishna's name, the wood becomes paste. And the paste is very fragrant. The fragrance that's in the wood comes out when you go like this. And the paste has a cooling effect by applying the sandalwood paste. Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. Taking the topics and hearing them in the association of devotees again and again, the sweetness comes out, the rasa, the taste, just from what we're doing right now, hearing again. Because the first question is, anybody need an introduction? So we've all heard the story of Prahlad. Now we're going to hear it again, and hopefully you want to hear it again and again, like Lord Chaitanya. I'm not Gadadhar Pandit, you're not Lord Chaitanya. But the principle is the same. That's the method of descending mercy coming from this literary form of Krishna. And our founder Acharya, he was also very fond of making Srimad Bhagavatam and its narration abundantly available. When I first heard some classes where Prabhupada would make reference to Prahlad Maharaj, right away, new bhakta, 21-year-old kid, he became one of my heroes. Like, Prahlad Maharaj, wow. And you know what Prabhupada did? He satisfied the devotees who saw Prahlad Maharaj as a hero, and he created a little, because in those early days, the main literature that we had was Bhakti Godhead magazine. But then he provided another literature, Teachings of Prahlad. It was like half the size of the front cover of Bhakti Godhead. It was about the same number of pages, and it was a little booklet, more than a pamphlet, a booklet, publication, describing the teachings of Prahlad. Whew, I was so happy. We got to introduce anybody to Prahlad Maharaj by the mercy of our founder Acharya. Mass, boxes and boxes, fill rooms full of teachings of Prahlad Maharaj and let him fly. It was really nice. So he has a special place in my heart, Prahlad Maharaj, and Srila Prabhupada, I believe, also. So we're going to spend some time hearing from our founder, Chari, the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj from Srimad Bhagavatam. We're going to start from, there's a number of sections of Canto 7, where Prahlad is giving teachings. We're going to start in Chapter 5. But the beginning of Chapter 6, there's Prahlad in Mayapur during Chandan Yatra. And Prabhupada writes in the introduction section of Chapter 6, by accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of devotional service, of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, There is no need for material qualifications. Just two sentences says a lot. Three things. Accept the feet of. Take shelter of the feet of Prahlad Maharaj. Now how do you do that? Because he's in Vaikuntha. It's through his instructions, or through his teachings, through his sound vibration. Fortunately, it's recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's taking shelter or accepting the lotus feet. That's his instructions. Then, by doing so, one can understand the mode of spiritual life. Out there, in the spiritual marketplace, there's a lot of options. And young people today get really spun out. My experience, dealing with, interacting with college students. So many options, they're bewildered. Without details, generally speaking, they're impersonal. It's not a new thing. It's a very old thing. But the current thing is generally impersonal. So the concept of this spiritual life, meaning taking shelter of a supreme person, there's kind of like they're allergic to that. That, you know, you don't say the God word in college. They'll show you the door. They'll shut you out. You're not interested. Somehow, without being, deceptive, one has to generally speaking, there's exceptions, bring persons to the personal conception of life. And Prahlad Maharaj, of course, the time was Satya Yuga. It's a different time than Kali Yuga. But his fearlessness and his purity made it possible to achieve giving an understanding of the mode of spiritual life. And then the third point is, again and again and again, within his teaching says, no prior material qualification for devotional service. Or say it negatively, there's no material disqualification for devotional service or the mode of spiritual life. It's dependent upon two main things, effort and mercy. You want it, and you connect with a source that can give it. Prahlad connected with a source that can give it. That's Narada Muni. So chapter 5 begins after chapter 4. And in chapter 4, it's Narada Muni narrating all of this to Yudhisthira Maharaj at the Rajasuya Yajna. That's starting in chapter 1 and through the whole canto. Hiranyakashipu's austerities, Brahma coming to give him his benedictions, while Hiranyakashipu was off doing his austerities. Chapter 4 describes the demigods who lost their kingdom by this powerful terrorist Hiranyakashipu, who just pushed them out of their kingdom and took over. Kingdom of heaven. He wanted to rule. And then he wanted to be like rule forever. He wanted to be God. And at the same time, his avowed enemy was Vishnu. That's earlier chapter. Varaha killed Hiranyaksha. And he knew that was Vishnu, so I take this vow. I will kill Vishnu. I'm going to avenge the death of my brother. So he's my enemy, and I'm God. Raga, Dvesha. Samutena, Dvandva Mohena. Bharata. So while he was away doing his austerities, magic, huh? While he was away doing those austerities, the demigods got word he's away, and they came back and they took over the kingdom again, and they found Kayado. She was pregnant. They wanted to arrest her and kill the child in her womb. Narada, in his inimitable, uncanny way, knew when to show up, what to say, and what to do, right at the right time, the right way. Narada's like, really cool. So, no, it's not a demon, it's a great soul. Entrust her to my ashram. I have a place in my ashram where some ladies can stay, and I'll take care of her. And he instructed her in transcendental knowledge. Prahlad heard from Narada. And you know, it was a long time that he heard from Narada. You know how long? Do you know how long? How long was Hiranyakashipu doing his thing? You know, standing on his tiptoes with his arms raised and the ants eating his body, and all that was left was the bones. And the life air was circulating in the hollow of his bones, and all you could see was a big anthill where his body used to be. 100 celestial years. That's a long time. A long time to do anything, but to speak or stand like this. So while Kayado was in Narada's ashram, she made a request. Can you give your great sage, can you give a benediction that my child will not be born until my husband comes back? So the answer was yes. And he gave some additional benedictions which Lord Nrisingadeva upheld, which was, your son will not be able to be destroyed by anyone. He died of natural death, but no one can destroy him. So Lord Vishnu upheld the word of Narada. So even when Hiranyakashipu tried to destroy him, he couldn't destroy him. Because Narada said no one can destroy him, and Vishnu upheld his word. And other things. So when Hiranyakashipu came back, after getting Brahma's benedictions, that he calculated, now I'm eternal, but he wasn't. Kayado, his wife, came back. Narada was born. Narada was placed in school when he was 5. Prahlad was placed in school. The two teachers were the sons of the priest of the demons, Shukracharya. And so chapter 5 opens. Now we're beginning chapter 5. I'm just going to cover one verse. It's a nice element of all of his teachings. I've been through this many, many times, many, many times, for many, many hours, and contemplated on these teachings. And I find the first teaching is something like a foundational one, and the other teachings are expanding on the foundational one. There are elements in it, so we'll spend a little bit of time on the elements. So this is Narada speaking to Yudhisthira, the king of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, took Prahlad on his lap, and although he was this mega demon and terrorist, he was affectionate. He had this side to him. He had another side to him also, but he was affectionate. And with affection, he asked, my dear son, please let me know what you think is the best of all subjects you have studied. from your teachers. And he's thinking Shandanamarka. Prahlad isn't thinking Shandanamarka. They're not teachers, they're blind. They're teaching ignorance because they're ignorant. So they're not right teachers. So this is the first instruction, comes in chapter 5. Let's chant it together. Tat sadu manye suravarya dehinam sadat samudvigna diyam asat grahat idvatma patam griham andakupam vanam gato yad dharim ashrayeta. We'll start with these two words, dehinam and asat grahat. So, dehi, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I've listened to Prabhupada's recording, so I know some things. Dehi and deha. Deha is the body, and dehi is one who has a body. So, dehi nam is plural, those who have bodies. That's every one of us. Nothing wrong. We got a body. So that's not the problem. The problem is the asat grahat. So we know this word griha. It's part of our English, our ISKCON nomenclature we regularly use. Grahastha ashram. Grahastha, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. We all know those. So griha literally means home, and grahastha ashram means a place where spiritual cultivation goes on. That's an ashram. So brahmachari ashram, grahastha ashram, etc. Place where spiritual cultivation goes on, and it can go on in a family home, family situation in the home. A broader sense of the term is that we'll go really broad. Material consciousness, I and mine. So first is Canto 2, an early teaching in Canto 2, now being expanded in Canto 7. But aham and mama, I and mine. So if I think I'm the body, then what's mine? It's what's produced from the body. That's mine. So I'm a carpenter, and I get some wood, and I get a saw, and I get some nails, and I get some tools, and I make a table. Because I made it, it's mine. And I take the table to a grain merchant and say, I'll trade you this table for so many bags of grain. Great, I need a table. I'll take your table and you take the grain. Now, where the grain come from, where the wood and the intelligence and the ability come from, that came from Krishna, but I think it's mine. And there's, besides barter, there's other means of thinking something is mine. I go to college, get an education, get a degree, get a job, do some work, and then there's the fruits of my work. And that's mine, because it came from me. And then the stuff that fruits of those work buy, that's mine. The house, the car, the bank balance, the taxes, the bills, you know, that's and my spouse and my children, and that's mine. Because it came from me, because I'm this body. And as long as one, what he's saying, Prahlad is saying to his father, what's the best thing that you've learned? As long as one has this asat grahat, asat and sat, temporary, and one who is attached to being the enjoyer of the temporary, thinking this is mine and I'm meant to be the enjoyer of it because it's mine. And then it keeps going, you know, so many things are mine and I have my project to make more things mine. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, one of my God brothers, he calls it, we all have our God project. We want to be the Ishwara of something. Ishwara, aham, aham bogi. We all have our little, not necessarily demoniac, but ignorant for sure. Ignorant for sure of what the reality is. It's not mine. The reality is, it's not mine. I'll say it again. The reality is, it's not mine. Huh? You're repeating. Well, it's really, let's say it in some other ways. We enter the world owning nothing. We leave the world owning nothing. And in between, we're very busy making things mine. And that's our God project. That's a materialistic life, a satgrahat. Another way is saying the same thing. In America, people who live a very devoted life, there's this phrase in America, renounce your worldly possessions. When I turned 65, I had an interview to see if I could get Medicaid. And they asked me, have you taken a vow of poverty? That's like when you become a priest. You're right. I have a vow of poverty, or a nun, vow of poverty. So when kids come to our temples, you know, high school, college, you know, it's even junior high school, in different categories, philosophy, world religion, something, something. Religious studies, they have, you know, different. And they like to come. And I learned from their visits, they like to come at a time when we do our rituals, because what's the difference between this ism and that ism is their rituals, because basically the ism is the same. That's what they teach. All religions are one, just rituals are different. So let's go see the Hare Krishna people, they have some interesting rituals. So they come during the ritual time. They come at 7 o'clock for deity greeting. You know, there's a ritual. And then the curtain opens. That's a ritual. Behind the curtain is the deities. There's a ritual. Jamuna sings Govinda prayers. There's a ritual. We pay obeisances many times. That's a ritual. We finish that. We go back and do another ritual. We do a Guru Puja ritual. Chamara and fire, you know, we do all these ritual things. And then we sit down on the floor and do our Jayarada Madhava ritual and the garland ritual, and we have our rituals. So generally they like an introductory class, you know, Bhakti 101. Like, what are you people about? And then at the end, there's questions. So one of the standard questions I've learned from doing this a number of times, in order to be a member of this religion, the way that they ask the question, do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions? And my answer is no. You don't have to renounce all your worldly possessions, but you do have to renounce the misconception that you have worldly possessions to renounce. And they laugh like that, you know, could you explain that one? Sure. Everything belongs to the source of everything. And there is a source of everything. Everything has a source. And everything is the property of that source. Isavasya midam sarvam, etc. And that's the consciousness that we have to shift from. It's mine, rooted in the I am this body conception, then boom, boom. You don't have to think about it. It's mine. It's just part of material consciousness. And then comes a life of material consciousness, a satgrahat. So there are these two words, Dehinam and Asatgrahat. Then comes samudvigna dhyam. When you see that phrase, D-H-I, it means intelligence, like su-buddhi, or buddhi yoga. D means intelligence. And so samudvigna dhyam is intelligence that's filled with anxiety. Now, normally, customarily, we think of anxiety as being in the mind. But behind the mind is the intelligence. When the intelligence can't discriminate properly, because that's what intelligence is supposed to do, discern one thing from another thing. I studied IQ tests just out of curiosity, like, what's this all about anyways? And it's just a test to see, can you discern one thing from another thing? Without the detail. That's what it is. And a high IQ is, you can discern one thing from another thing. And a low IQ is, you're not so good at it. It's principle-based. It's not even like information-based. It's just discerning one thing from another thing. So if your intelligence is skewed or misdirected by our dear friend false ego to identify with what we're not, the temporary body and the temporary mind and all the stuff that goes on in the mind, the thoughts, the desires, and you know, the turmoil in the mind. If we identify with that, the intelligence, dhi, is filled with anxiety. Now the mind is too, and the senses are too. Samudvigna dhyam, sada samudvigna dhyam asat grahat. Then he makes a metaphor. Hidvatma patam griham andakupam. Andakupam means a blind well or dark well. Now, almost everybody here is from India, so you know about wells. At least the older generation people for sure know about wells. Not so much in America, although some places, in Gitanagri they have well. In Alachua they have wells. But, you know, Dallas, Texas, you don't have wells anymore. You have central water. But I had a friend who got his PhD at a prestigious college. Within a week after he completed his PhD, it was a long climb up that hill, he got his PhD, and he was in the process of identifying where he would teach. One evening he was out doing some errand. Good intention. He walked over a piece of land that used to be a well, but now it wasn't a well anymore because it was dry. It was grass over the well, and he fell in the well and broke his neck and died. So, you know, energetically or emotionally, this has a particular negative connotation for me. Prahlad is making a comparison. Persons in this category, they're asura persons, manye asura, varya dehinam. This like persons who have fallen into a dark well that has no water and only misery. Then he has a recommendation to his dear father. Vanam gato yad dhadi ashrayeta. Go to the forest. Give up that, it's let go of that attachment to asat and leave it behind, because you just struggle and struggle and struggle, endlessly struggle, lifetime after lifetime. It's explained later as he expands these principles. best to just leave it behind and go to the forest, especially Vrindavan. Prabhupada puts that in there, where Krishna consciousness is abundant. And take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari Ashrayeta. Hari Ashrayeta. Now, Hari is Hiranyakashipu's avowed enemy. He wants to kill him. I will kill Vishnu because he killed my brother. Thinking Vishnu is killable or material like his brother and like him. Now, as the prayers, as the teachings expand, it's a natural wrong conclusion that Hari is killable or Vishnu has a material body like me. One cannot, when this asat grahat, when the attachment to the temporary is deeply rooted, transcendental knowledge, to know oneself, to know supersoul, to know spiritual anything, is blocked. And instead, one reaches the wrong conclusion, the conclusion of darkness instead of the conclusion of light. So it's a sad condition. So, okay. Let's go to the Prabhupada's translation part. Oh, best of the asuras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety, that's the sumud vigna, because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. So his advice is such a person should give up the position and go to the forest. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan where Krishna consciousness is prevalent. And should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's the positive and the negative in these transcendental instructions. One of the earliest Back to Godhead magazines I received, I think it was the second one, it was an illustrated kind of like, not a cartoon, but little boxes that told the story. And the story was a story that Prabhupada said that he heard from Bhakti Siddhanta. And during the Braj Mandal Parikrama, every evening the devotees would go visit, they had an option, go visit some places in Vrindavan with a guide, or stay and hear Bhakti Siddhanta speak. Prabhupada commented that most of the devotees, they wanted to see the places. And so they went off to see the places. And some of the persons, they stayed to hear Bhakti Siddhanta, and Prabhupada regularly stayed to hear. He said, Bhakti Siddhanta noted, this young man, he likes to hear. Prabhupada said, sometimes I couldn't understand. But I stayed and listened because I had faith that just by hearing, I would become elevated and purified. Just on that note, I heard Tamal Krishnaraj say, when Prabhupada was in starting what he was calling the World Harinam Sankirtan Party, he invited devotees from Europe, America, and Australia to come to India and begin the World Sankirtan Party. And sometimes when he was traveling in India, the audience didn't understand English, so he would speak in Hindi. So after the kirtan, Achyutananda leading the kirtan and lively devotee dancing on the stage, and they all sat down, it was time for class, and Prabhupada starting speaking Hindi. The devotee, the Western devotees that couldn't understand Hindi, they started to get up because they couldn't understand Hindi. And Prabhupada, right in the middle of the class, stopped them. He said, where are you going? Well, we don't understand Hindi, Prabhupada. He said, just didn't listen because it will purify you, even you don't understand. He did that himself because with Bhaktisiddhanta, now his language, as you know, was, you know, you got to get binoculars to really high. But the sound vibration is so pure. I had first-hand experience of that also from an article that he wrote in English. And English is my main language, and English wasn't his, and I had to look up every fifth word in a dictionary. But it wasn't just because the language was high. His consciousness was high, and it was transmitted in his writing. So the second Back to Godhead magazine I received was the story of the wedding party. Now, most of you probably know the wedding story. But for those of you that don't, Bhaktisiddhanta, this is in Vrindavan, one evening was asked, why is it that we see one devotee seems to make very rapid progress and another devotee doesn't seem to make the same progress? Why is that? And to answer the question, he told the story, the wedding story. So, in Bengal, travel between one place and another place is often by boat. So, when the wedding was to take place, the family of the young man got in a boat to go downstream or down the river to the village of the girl, night travel, and they paid the boatman and go to such and such village, and oh, happy day, there's a wedding tomorrow and we'll wake up and the wedding will take place. So they took rest in a very jolly mood, and when the sun rose in the morning, and they looked around and they were in the same place. So they really chastised the boatman. You've ruined everything. You went to sleep. No, I didn't go to sleep. I was rowing all night. If you were rowing all night, how come we're in the same place? And they searched and searched and they found he left the anchor in. So similarly, we may make efforts, even say it this way, two persons making the same external effort of doing and do not doing and they're the external. But if asatgrahat, if the attachment to the temporary remains intact, then we're not going to make much progress. It's not a waste of time. Krishna will see our effort. However, there's something else that we have to do. Well, there's the two things. So this taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of God. And it's not that the answer is everyone has to go to the forest. The answer is let go of the attachment to the temporary. So what does that look like? It looks like, well, he discusses it later in the course of his prayers, in the course of his teachings, as well as the course of his prayers and his own personal life. he, Prahlad, by Narada's association, had no attraction for Asat. At the end of chapter 9, when the Lord Nrisingadev says, Prahlad, you please me so much. You have made such wonderful prayers. You have taken such full shelter of me. I want to give you a benediction. I am the only person who can fulfill all living entities' desires. Ask anything that you like, and it's yours. Like, how many zeros do you want at the end of this blank check? You specify. And Prahlad smiled and said, please don't entice me. I'm born in a demoniac family, and it's just natural to have materialistic inclination. And you offer something, and I'll see it as an opportunity to be an enjoyer of something. So please don't do that. And if I want something from you, then that's not devotion. And if you simply give something to me because I did some favors for you, that's not a good master either. You really want to give me a benediction? Take away all desire for material enjoyment from my heart. Then you can give me whatever you like, and it'll be no problem. And he doesn't exactly say that, but one who has this situation where they're free from material desire, they can have the opulence of Vaikuntha and handle it. Or they can have nothing and handle it. Because there's no material hankering, no material lamentation, na sochati, na kangsati. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Prahlad is just expanding the teachings that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita very wonderfully. So, I think tomorrow I'll continue with chapter 5 and try to show how this verse, the first teaching that he gives to his father, is expanded. Just like a sutra, then you just unpack the sutra. But the elements are the same, just more further elaborated. It's important for us because he's teaching us how to get to where we want to go. What's the goal and how to get there? And what are impediments so that you won't get to the goal? You certainly won't get to the goal if you don't know what the goal is. That's pretty easy. But even if you know what the goal is, if you don't know how to get there, it's going to be a little challenge. And even if you know how to get there, if you don't pull the anchor, you're not going to get there. He's teaching the way of going from where we are to where we want to go and making it very clear where we want to go. In what time do we have to leave here to reach the Sunday program? 4. So I'll continue. This is, I'm invested enthusiastically in appreciating how Prahlad Maharaj's teachings and his prayers, because there's 2 sections, are helping. If you hear it with your receiver on, the vibration is pure. It will carry you to where you want to go. Everything is there. It takes a little unpacking, but everything is there. So I want to share that further. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Any discussion? Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. So, what was Prahlad Maharaj's previous life? Because
in his previous life, there's 2 answers. There may be more than 2, because there's different yoga cycles. In chapter 10, Prahlad says, "You sent me." Seeing this world filled with lusted desires, the modes of passion and ignorance, you requested me to descend here and show by example the way of pure devotional service. Means he's a Vaikunthavasi. Prabhupada's comment, Nitya Siddha. That was verse number seven. Later, verse number 13, Prabhupada, in his own purport, says he's a Nitya Siddha and a Sadhana Siddha mixed. Anyway, from the spiritual, because he's Nitya Siddha, he's a perfect being, but he showed the way of hearing from Narada and et cetera, cultivating Krishna consciousness, Sadhana Siddha. So that's one. Vaikunthavasi, that's who he was. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami quotes Brahma Vivarta Purana in explaining, you know what Hari Bhakti Vilas says, right? It's a how-to manual, how do you do things. So one of the things that it's discussing there is how to observe Nrisimha Chaturdasi. I mean, how to observe Ekadasi, how to observe Dhammastami, how to everything. So, Sanatana Goswami quotes this, saying, Prahlad asked Lord Nrisimhadeva, how did I become your devotee? Could you either lean one way or the other? Because, yeah, in the blue sari, just lean one way or the other way, so I can have eye contact with the person that's asking the question. Thank you. We're doing this one. Lord Nrisimhadeva says, in your previous life you were a Brahmana, but a fallen Brahmana. You were born Brahmana, but you didn't do Brahminical duties. In fact, you became very fallen. You didn't study the Vedas. You started associating with a prostitute. You were engaged in bad activities and drinking and, you know, things that Brahmanas don't do. And you spent your... It's like an Ajamila story. You spent your life with this prostitute. Then one fine day, you only did one good thing. On Nrisimha Chaturdasi, you had a quarrel with the prostitute. You became upset. So you fasted on Nrisimha Chaturdasi. In fact, you fasted all night until the next morning. And she also was upset. And she fasted all day and into the next morning. So that's the one good thing that you did, unknowingly. But this Nrisimha Chaturdasi is so powerful that now you've taken your birth as my devotee. And at the end of this life, you'll go back to Godhead, having further cultivated bhakti. And the prostitute, she became an apsara, and after her life as an apsara, she went back to Godhead. So, and then how to observe, there's more verses that say how to observe Nrisimha Chaturdasi, but that's another explanation in another yuga cycle, we can assume. He had his hand up first. Yes, please.
It's easy to climb a clean state when it is dirty. Since birth, so much I have received which contradicts the principles of spiritual practice.
Can you hear him in the back?
No.
I'll repeat. Can you speak a little? Should I give you the microphone? Ah, good. It's easy to write on a blank slate, one that already has scribbles on it. It's harder to discern. I've been dumped on with so many impure things.
Right. So, you mentioned that even if I keep practicing, but the anchor has not been taken out, my anchor is still there.
That's right.
And it is all because of my condition.
No. We make choices every moment. We're sustaining the anchor in. Huh? Okay. It's not, well, my conditioning, I have to leave the anchor in. No, you don't have to leave the anchor in because of conditioning. We leave the anchor in because of choices we make. We have free will. We don't have to leave the anchor in. There are probably lots of anchors. You pull one, this is a very common thing. Very common thing. Devotees, as they start to make progress in Krishna consciousness, they realize, oh my God, there's so many impure things in my heart. And that's good, you find, because they're already there. Just you didn't know they were there because you weren't purified enough to know they're there. Many anchors. So, take one at a time. Keep practicing. That's go to the light. And then let go. At least, little by little. Scrub and let go. Don't hold on. It's choice. The bhakti process is purifying. That's for sure. We're keeping some anchors in. That's also for sure. We don't have to. That's also for sure. But we're attached, not just anchors in. So we have our favorite ones. Some ones just go quickly. Some other ones don't go so quickly. Then we have to, have a strategy. Good association, good sadhana, and select an anchor that you can lift. And then you celebrate, and then you do another one. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote in Amnaya Sutra, he calls it, there's a section called Retraction of Bad Habits. And he says, each bad habit may take 5 years. But take it till it's gone. Now what happens when you are working on one is others become relieved also, even when you're focusing on one. If you don't focus on one, not a whole lot happens anywhere. So take one that's doable and you focus on it, and that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's advice. You can look it up later if you like, Amnaya Sutra. But it's speaking now principle. You're asking not detail, but principle. We don't have to keep our anchors in. It's not just because of condition that we have to keep our anchors in. The cheto darpana marjanam, the process of chanting and hearing is purifying. But if we keep putting that thing that gets purified, put it back, that's our foolishness. We don't have to do that. Based on his?
Based on what I've seen in the shloka.
Yeah, you want to see it again?
Yeah, which is basically, yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead, keep speaking.
So, basically, the ultimate destination seems to be remove the anchor.
And go to Krishna. Yeah.
Now, if I take that as it is,
there's details.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not, that's a principle. And then there's how do you follow the principle? There's details.
Because I'm confused in the fact that I'm a grihastha right now. I had a
home. No problem. Prahlad became a householder. Prahlad became a king. Prahlad had the opulence of his father. Prahlad had children. Prahlad did the whole shebang without any attachment. He didn't have attachment. He did it all without attachment. Why? Because Lord Nrisimhadev wanted him to. That's why. Now, the starting point is a little different. That's okay. Whatever the starting point is, that's what it is. And go towards the light. There's the model. We have a model. I'm not there yet. But I know what the model is, and I know some steps that I should take to get to the goal. Sustainable ones, not impulsive, I can't sustain them ones. Okay. Yes. Prahlad is Krishna conscious from the birth, not me. So what am I? What's my takeaway, given I'm not Krishna conscious from birth? That's your question? I don't mind saying it again. There's a goal. Like, you know, I was this 21-year-old bhakta that thought I understood some things. And later I understood that I really didn't understand those things that I thought I understood. But I was enthusiastic to learn. And Prahlad was a role model. Now, I didn't become a householder. I didn't become a king. I didn't become a parent of descendants. But the principle from where I was to what I saw in Prahlad's example and teachings, the way or the mode of spiritual life. So that's the takeaway. When Lord Nrisimhadev, chapter 10, texts 11 through 13, he says, you're detached. I want you to rule the kingdom. Don't worry, you'll be protected because you'll be engaged in hearing and chanting my glories, and that will be your protection. That's your means of purification and of protection. And as you do, then you can pass on to your dependents. And if you don't do, you won't be able to pass on to your dependents. You'll have become a father, like all the other species of life, they can produce offspring. But then it's not so much different. In his words to his teachers, Pashu Buddhi, the intelligence of an animal. Animals can produce offspring, so can we. So don't be a Pashu Buddhi, be a Subuddhi. Become. Shravanam, it's in his teachings to his father, the nine processes. Starts with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. So do that. Know that that's the means and the goal. I'm not there yet, but that's the means and that's the goal. Let me cultivate it. Inspired by Prahlad or Narada or Prabhupada or those who are on that platform. Yes. You do? Very nice. Where? In the city of? 15 minutes from here. Okay. Sure. Very good.
My question is if I can also introduce the same Mahamantra to the cows also.
How are you going to do that? You want them to chant? You want them to hear? Oh, sure. Sure, yes. Yes.
What else can we do for the kids?
But that's the kids, and then there's the cows. So you can, in the barn, or whatever you call it, the Goshal, you can play recorded chanting a Maha Mantra. And there's spiritual benefit, enormous spiritual benefit. Now, how are you going to measure the spiritual benefit? There's no meter to measure the spiritual benefit the cows will receive. But on the authority of the Vedas, you can know. That's how you know. Not by empirical data, but by aparusheya shabda. Transcendental sound from an infallible source. You can know. And, you know, all the flies and bugs and the other little critters, they're going to get spiritual benefit too. Fantastic idea. Well, why do you want to introduce? They can learn other things, but core and essential is the Maha Mantra. Now, depending on what the aptitude of the children is, reciting the Vedas is very sanctifying also. And there are special sections of the Vedas that are very meaningful for children. There's a section, for example, where Rishabhdev, Canto 5, the first five verses, Rishabhdev is teaching his 100 sons. That's especially nice for children to recite, etc. Someone that's, you know, learned here can guide you. These are nice sections for the children to daily recite, and they can learn them. Some sections or key verses of Bhagavad Gita or something like that. But what's important is that they know the meaning, not just they recite. The sound is also beneficial, but it's insufficient without the meaning. Okay, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. Yeah.